tell your mom about Michael. Got a guy that makes you scream and shout.
Hi, everyone. This is Punk News editor Ricky Frankel, and welcome back to Live at It's Not Dead Fest 2, a three-part in-person interview series that I conducted at It's Not Dead Fest 2 in San Bernardino, California. I hope you enjoyed the second installment with Spike Slauson of Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. It's always fun to talk to him. So for the third episode, as you may have heard on episode 368 of the Punk News podcast, I interviewed Chris Cresswell and Scott Brigham of the Flatliners. You may hear some background noises again because this took place outside in a tent, and there were some people dragging like some metal bucket or something like that. It was ridiculous, but it wasn't too bad for the recording. We talked about their change in sound throughout the band, their career, their music video for Indoors, their famous South Park Canadian costumes that they wore at the Fest, I believe Fest 10. If I'm not mistaken. We also talked about Canadian comedy and a whole bunch more. They were a really fun interview. I want to thank John, Adam, and Ob and Punk News for letting me do these interviews and for getting me into It's Not Dead Fest 2. Again, like this was pretty awesome. I you may have heard me kind of recap it on episode 368 of the Punk News podcast too. I mean, it was hard not to have a good time at that festival. So I also want to thank Mike Cabillos of Earshot Media, who helped put these interviews together, Greg Simpson for producing these podcasts, my brother Andrew for helping me stitch these interviews all together, and Brian Priedus of Pairs for the awesome theme song. As usual, I love that theme song. It was one of the best birthday presents I've ever gotten. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can email us or forward your spam to us at podcast@punknews.org. So to get this interview started, let's listen to Indoors from the Flatliners, from their album Inviting Light, which came out earlier this year through Rush Records. Here it is.
I've been rolling circles in. here with Chris and Scott from the Flatliners, who I just caught. They were on a fucking great show.
Thank you.
So first thing, I'm gonna kind of go in order of like your career in
sure.
discography.
Yeah.
So something that's always kind of
yeah. quotes.
So I would have been curious, what's that clip and who's singing Fred's Got Slacks at the very end of that song?
It's like we have an expose right
it
now.
It is.
Eh?
Yeah. That was from an SNL skit with Will Ferrell.
Yeah, Will Ferrell's the devil, and Garth Brooks, I think, right, is like the dude. He's like wants to learn how to write songs and play guitar, so he sells his soul to the devil in return for it. And then Will Ferrell shows up as devil and has like the shittiest song. It's so good, though. Yeah, man. Not many people know that, which we were always surprised.
It's surprising,
by.
Yeah. I think it was like
it's so distinguishably like his voice to
yeah.
me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It seemed like I'm like, is it one of them or like? Yeah. Or whatever. So, you guys have changed sounds at least twice since you went from ska.
Sure,
then I'd say like Cavalcade,
yeah.
And then now. Is that hard to do? I mean, was it a concerted effort to do that?
It's not hard to do. it takes some time to do it, but I only say that because to us, we've never really realized. We were doing it well maybe back in the day from the ska punk stuff on our first record to the Great Awake
yeah.
and everything after like we kind of we noticed that but that was
funny for them, huh?
Yeah that was just
the
more
fuck
of
is
like
everyone
we were,
talking about?
Yeah we were kids when we wrote that first record and
yeah.
then we started touring a little bit and learned you know in those formative late teenage years you learn a lot about yourself you also think you fucking know everything
yeah.
and we just experienced I don't know some more corners of the punk rock world that we really started to like so there was that initial shift but the newer one happened so gradually that we didn't even really realize until we started like
really?
Showing to be honest like we were like showing friends and like partners and family members and stuff like new stuff and they're like
this is fucking
this
different
isn't, yeah or some people are like well when are you gonna play me your band songs like they didn't even think that it was the same band so that's when we were like shit I guess this is pretty different but
yeah.
I mean to be honest like it felt a little different writing the record, but it was just because we were excited to do the first record in a while. So we didn't really think of it that way. But now I hear it. Now I see it.
Yeah.
But it's been cool to like we get to mix all those songs in with the old songs, like when we play live, and it's fun,
it's
man.
It's a great way to keep it interesting for us, too, man. We've been doing it, like, not for the longest time, but we've been doing it for a while.
Well, I mean, it's been 15 years, and that leads me to my next question. I mean, you're one of the few bands that have had the same lineup for that long. How do you maintain that?
A lot of non-disclosure agreements floating around. I don't know. I mean, we've all been friends since we were little kids, and then we started the band after that. And I think it's such a cliche, but it's true that if you can remain friends first and keep a level head on your shoulders amidst getting to meet and befriend and tour with some of your favorite bands and living every fucking day of your life like it's a Saturday night and you know what I mean like seeing the world doing all this crazy shit you can do your best to still at the end of the day remember that the reason you're doing it is because like you exist in this world with your three friends who are doing it together and that's really what it's about and it's not about some rock star bullshit it's not about you know what I mean
like,
if you can just remember the old days when I met Scott when we were four you know what I mean like
do you remember that still?
Well, I just mean like you remember how long you've known each other
right.
for. Like that, I don't know, it kind of brings it all together. It makes it easier, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So, go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We definitely know like which buttons to push and not push
sure.
at this point too. Like we make an effort not to piss each other off, I think.
Sometimes
especially
we make an effort to piss each other off, but that's all right.
It happens.
So you guys, I love this fact about this, about you guys. You named the song Shithawks is from Trailer Park Boys,
yeah.
and I'm sorry. So I'm curious, how did the lyrics and the name work? Just kind of work together. Why did you guys decide on that? Because I mean, sure, the show is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, is there a connection between the lyrics and
the title?
Yeah.
There's a loose connection. Like the song is all about friends who talk shit on each other, and you know the kind of like dangerous game of like going through the maze of, you know, I don't know, some kind of social apparatus to, if you've done that kind of shit, you're kind of a shitty friend to make it seem like you're a good friend and all these kinds of things. So,
is it because shit hawk rhymes with shit talk?
It not really.
Is that why you
that would
have
been way better. No,
just
it just
that
like,
for now.
It just, you know, we were like, we had the song and we were working on Cavalcade and
watching a lot watching of Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah. And just, I don't know.
You just described my college career, actually.
But I mean, you know, like, this wasn't why we called the song that, but now looking back, like, I don't know, you could probably refer to someone like who's a shitty friend who always talks shit as a shit hawk if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But shout out to Trailer Park Boys for fucking big pointing time. The term. John Dunsworth, Mr. Leahy, knows what he's doing.
So I think one of your more underrated songs is Fangs. I think that is a that EP is really great. I'm just curious.
You're gonna bust out some old shit like we didn't even know other people knew about. Oh, no.
So, I'm curious. Why didn't that song make it onto? I know it made it onto the collection album, but how come it didn't make it onto the one of the full lengths?
We just had a lot of songs, and it gets really tough. I mean, everyone has different opinions on what their favorite songs are, and I really like that one too.
Yeah.
I think it just came down to luck of the draw, man. It didn't make it.
Yeah. And like we had like Dead Language is, I think probably in a way our heaviest record. There's some heavy shit on there at least.
Yeah.
I think that was to me why when having to choose, like, we kind of wrangle up like everyone's like bottom 3 to 5 songs of, because we always record extra songs, and then you kind of see where things are at. And personally, I thought there was already enough like heavy elements on the record that we could have that song take a backseat for a little while.
Right.
But we always knew that we were going to do something with it. That was the hardest. That was the hardest one, Dead Language, to like whittle down to an album.
Really?
We did like 20 songs for that record. We did like 18 for Cavalcade. We did fucking 20 for the new one.
Yeah.
Like, we always have too many songs. But it's not a bad problem to have, especially because then after that we can put out Division of Spoils and really let Fangs, you know, like, shine.
Yeah.
We played it for a while on
Yeah,
the
we've
road
played
too,
it. There's songs on Dead Language that we've never played before live, and Fangs we've played probably... Yeah. I don't know, for at least a couple tours.
Well, it has to be fun to play.
It's really fun to play.
I mean, I've been playing guitar for 15 years. Like, that has to be fun to play.
It's very fun to play.
Yeah. John Darby wrote that song.
Really?
Yeah, man. And, like, so we all... there was this joke that we were going to call the B-sides record John's, like, favorite songs. Because, like, all of his favorite songs always get cut from the records. Every fucking time, man. John's greatest hits or something.
Poor guy.
It's going to be him with a joint in his mouth on the cover.
So, Chris, you guys just put out the Scorpios record this year, too. So,
he sure did, man. And let me say, you killed it.
Thanks, buddy.
No, you did a great job.
For sure.
Thanks,
what?
I'm going to smoke.
How did... what was the story of you joining? I mean, I know it was for Tony Sly, but... And how was that recording process? And was it different from Flatliners? I mean, how did that work out?
I mean, to be honest, like, in 2015, we spent... most of the year with Lagwagon on the road. So Joey and I have become really close in the last few years, and we worked on an acoustic record of mine the year before we spent the year with Lagwagon on tour. Mm-hmm. So we knew each other really well, and he would kind of bring up the Scorpios thing every once in a while, saying how, you know, him and John Snodgrass and Brian Wallstrom wanted to do another one. And
it doesn't hurt that you're actually a Scorpio.
I'm actually a Scorpio as well.
Oh yeah, that's the rule.
That's like there's like two criteria: guitar and Scorpio. That's it. And my guitar sucks. So I don't know, man. Like to me, the way in which he would bring it up every so often, it seemed like he was kind of fucking with me. Like, not in a vindictive way. I thought he was just joking around.
Yeah.
Or maybe I couldn't take the time to truly let it sink in that, like, he was serious about wanting me to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all that to say, like, months and months would go by, and, like, after it came up, like, a dozen times, I was like, man, I don't know. Like, do you actually want me to do it, or do you not? I don't know if you're fucking with me. And he was like, dude, yeah. Like, I couldn't see it for what it was, I guess. Because, I mean, you know, I grew up on No Use for a Name, too.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, like, after Tony tragically died, you know, like... there's no replacing fucking Tony.
Right, yeah.
I'm not standing here trying to convince anyone of that. There was a part of me that thought people would think that, maybe, you know, but no way is that the deal. But I was shocked, but so, like, stoked that they asked me to actually fully be a part of it when it came down to recording it. And it was super fun. We did it in, like, a week and a bit. Like,
that only took a week?
Yeah, man. It was, like, super quick. We were all there together, like, at Joey's house in San Francisco, and it was super fun. And it's a lot different than recording a record with a band, for sure. A lot of delicate moments that you have to, you know, there's no gain, there's no distortion, there's no drummer, there's no anything to, like, mask things. So the stripped-down element to it is a lot to master sometimes. But, I mean, I'm so happy to just have a couple songs on that thing and be thought of. at least even to those dudes, as someone who's like worthy.
That's awesome.
Because that's why I kept thinking he was fucking with me, man.
Yeah. So you guys recently released a video for Indoors. How did you get the cameos, like Nubs, to be in it? And why a karaoke bar? I thought that was interesting. That was an interesting touch, I thought.
It was just kind of a cool idea that was pitched to us. And we've known Nubs for fucking forever.
Yeah, man.
You know, she's from Toronto, like us, and been good buddies. And there was some relation there. I think her boyfriend's brother directed
it. Her partner, Pat's brother, is the one who came up with the idea for the video and directed the video. And Pat's in it. Yeah. Two. Pat's the dude that does the somersault off the stage. And Pat's brother's in it too. So it's kind of like a whole family affair. We weren't even there for it.
No, it's great.
Yeah, man.
It's perfect. It turned out really
well.
It turned
out awesome. Yeah. That's why it turned out great. We didn't fucking sully it.
So there was one line in the new album that really stuck out to me. It's I'm personifying the wedding speech. What's the story behind that? That is in some way heart-wrenching, or I don't know. Like, can you kind of
just clear my throat?
Yeah. So I mean, what was kind of the message behind that line?
The short version is that I really like weddings.
Really,
I love weddings. But I'm always kind of stuck sitting at like the kids' table, so to speak. Like I feel like I'm usually sitting at the table while people are making speeches. Like most people at the table I'm sitting at are like talking really loud, and like I'm always at the table that's like the tattooed freaks and the drunk people. So I don't know, man.
Damn, but fucking right you are, right? Bud.
But I love the idea of a wedding speech, because like even if like you know that even if let's say for instance there's a sibling getting married and the older sibling makes a speech and they've had this tumultuous relationship and it's just been fucking terrible hell the whole time.
Yeah.
You know that they're going to get up there and say the cool shit that's happened. You know what I mean? So the wedding...
Sometimes.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess... Hopefully 90% of them... Sorry.
they're pulling the water bucket.
Hopefully 90% of the time. But all this to say, like, personifying the wedding speech to me is just a way of, like, you never know what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
If you can be positive about it, then that's probably all you can really do, and you'll probably be happier in life because of that, because like everything could change tomorrow, and I feel like that's just the feeling I get from someone making a wedding speech. Is like, you know, no one knows how this marriage will go, no one knows what's going to happen at the end of the night, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But you know, like for that moment it's all about love and positivity and family and shit. So cool. yeah man.
Was it hard playing in those Canadian costumes at Fest that one time?
Yes.
Yeah, dude, it was really hard.
It was very hard. I couldn't see what we were doing. We couldn't breathe.
They
were made very well by my girlfriend.
Excellent
job. Did a great job.
Excellent
Thank you very
job.
Much, dear.
Yeah,
But so they they really pushed against our nose really hard.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Did you get that? I think I have a bigger nose than you, too.
Well, did you guys have the... The way my mask was built was that the bottom of the mouth, because as we all know, Canadians have flappy heads.
Yeah, right, like right now. Right
now, yeah.
So the three singers had that.
It dangled.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so like there was pantyhose put there in between the top part of the head and the chin, let's say, the bottom of the face. And it was like to sing through, but at a certain point, like I couldn't see what I was playing. And when you can't see what you're playing, sometimes you don't need to see what you're playing, but when you can't see what you're playing, you start to freak out a little bit. You're like, fuck, and you start to fuck up. So I was like looking down at my fucking fretboard, like trying to make sure I could play everything. And then the whole mask would shift, and then the chin would just dangle, and I had to take mine off like two, three songs in. It was super fun, and they looked awesome, but they're really disorienting.
We talked about doing it again, but I don't think we ever... Yeah. I still have mine.
I still have mine, too, man.
Yeah. We make a...
And then we threw out craft dinner, like mac and cheese boxes, into the crowd. And then like some of the kids by the end of the set would be like crowd surfing with like the packet of powdered cheese in their hand and just fucking douse us in it, like on stage.
Yeah, it was brutal. All right, we only got a couple more. I don't know if you guys, I don't know who does your social media stuff.
It's me.
That's you. Okay. So I was the one that put the screenshot of you guys asking for Prime Minister Trudeau for weed on navel gazing.
Yes.
Did you ever get the weed or no?
No, man, he never came through. J- JT never came through for us, man.
Yeah, he's all talk, man.
He's all talk, dude. Justin
Trudeau. Those fucking pretty boys all talk.
Although,
dude.
Man, I mean, JT, if you're listening to the Punk News Podcast.
Which we know you are.
Yeah, yeah. We could definitely glaze, man. No, we never fucking got it.
All right, so I'm a huge fan of Canadian comedy. So my question for you guys is, Kenny versus Spenny or Trailer Park Boys?
Trailer Park Boys.
Man, they're both so good. I gotta go Trailer Park Boys between those two.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a Kenny versus Spenny guy.
I was like, I got starstruck the first time I ever saw Kenny in person. He's around Toronto. Like, you could run into him often.
Not a little moment in your head, though, where you thought maybe they were exaggerating a little bit on some of the situations?
Maybe there's a high production value.
I had heard that they tell the producers, like, what they're gonna do, and then they just kind of let it go. That's what I heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, unfortunately, that show made it. They had it on Comedy Central here at like 1:30 in the morning on Sundays. And for me, it was like, because it's always on Showcase, right?
Yeah, Showcase.
So what happened was...
Nice one.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what happened was, this was in the years where YouTube was like still fun and sketchy, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There were some amazing people that would upload it to YouTube in three parts at like 6 in the morning my time.
Cool.
So I'd watch it before school. And then it would get taken down by the end of the day.
That's a very good mental state for the day.
That's amazing.
The one where they have to wear the dead octopus on their head the longest.
God,
and I think Kenny slips him some LSD
and he
shits himself in the shower is probably like one of the like finest things on television I ever saw.
Yeah,
I don't think you can fake that either. My
favorite has to be who can imitate the other guy. Because they like dress, they like act like each other, like really messed up versions of each other, and it is. That's the only show I have ever watched where I consistently start crying from laughing.
Oh, yeah.
It's as it went on, it seemed to just get gnarlier and gnarlier.
Yeah. I think that's why it got canceled out here.
Probably. Yeah. There's a really good show right now in Canada called Letterkenny.
I haven't heard of it.
It's all one word. They're doing like 6 episode seasons, and they do them like, I think they're kind of rolling them out like 6 months apart.
Letterkenny's supposed to be like a town in southern Ontario.
Yeah.
Is it a real town?
I think it's a real town.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I heard the other day, actually. It's awesome. Like very on the tip of Trailer Park Boys.
Canadianity.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, like it's, dude, it's, you gotta check it out. Letterkenny is fucking hilarious.
Cool. All right, so thank you guys so much for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Why don't you give us a song to take us out, and I'll let you guys go.
Yeah, we'll follow form with Wilhelm. And,
you want to do The Horse?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right, here's The Horse by Wilhelm. Good choice.
Thank you.
His family is dead. They follow.